regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad you're with me on the program today. Hopefully you had a good weekend. I did. Actually, was super productive yesterday, which is a rare occasion. I tend to like to take things easy on the weekend, at least as easy as I can. But no, it was a good weekend. Also going to be a great show today. Rick Travis joining us here from the California Rifle and Pistol Association. Not great news because we are talking about California. Governor Gavin Newsom getting the legislature to go along with his plans to re-gerrymander the congressional maps in California. That took up a lot of time in Sacramento last week. So there weren't a lot of bills moving. But now that that is accomplished, we can expect to see some movement on some gun control bills, including AB 1127, which is the bill that would ban the sale of Glock handguns in the state of California going forward. We've talked about this bill with Rick before. It has passed out of the assembly. Over on the Senate side, there was a hearing, I believe it was, might have been last Monday. And then the bill was placed on the suspense file, which theoretically is good news, right? I mean, it means they're not going to take any action on it right away. Keywords there being right away. As Rick will detail, yeah, the Glock ban bill is still on the table and could soon be on the desk of Governor Gavin Newsom. Take a look and a listen. Rick, thanks so much for coming on the program. It's good to see you again.
Always a pleasure, Cam. Always a pleasure.
All right. So now that this gerrymandering, redistricting nonsense is over in, well, at least it's over in the legislature in Sacramento, what do you anticipate happening with AB 1127, the bill that would essentially ban the sale of Glock handguns going forward?
You know, that is like the $50,000 question, I think, nationwide. And the issue is, beforehand, we would have had the ability, and beforehand being the redistricting mess that we just went through, we would have, as we had discussed, been able to go into the Appropriations Committee and make plenty of arguments. But what they did, Cam, is they took all the bills, not just our bills, but all the bills, a total of 1,470 bills, and moved them to this Friday. And they're going to hear all of them in less than 3 hours, which means there's no testimony.
Well, I have to say, they're going to hear over 1,400 bills in 3 hours?
Yeah.
Is there some sort of deadline that they've got to meet? Is that why they're doing this?
The deadline, and what they did was they purposely pushed it to the Friday deadline.
That's crazy.
Because there's this huge budget battle. I mean, we are billions, and we're not talking a couple. We're talking like close to $70, $80 billion, depending on who you talk to, in debt. We just took on this $260 million fiasco called the redistricting issue for November 4th. That's twice the budget to fight fires that we supposedly don't have. California, you might know, is a fire-ridden place. We've had horrible fires. So they've told the voters there's no money for that. And yet, for all sorts of heinous bills, there apparently is going to be money for those, even though all of us are looking around going, where from? And 1127 is just one of those bills that, A, it's going to cost the taxpayer money because we're going to sue, Cam. Mm-hmm. We're going to sue. It's unconstitutional. That's going to set the taxpayers back on both sides of the dollar, being that, you know, where I'm going to pay taxes for the state to fight, where I'm also going to pay money out at CRPA to fight on the same thing. And you times that by multiple bills, and taxpayers are paying millions of dollars on this unconstitutional, and I'm just going to say it, crap, yeah, that they keep throwing at us. You know, and it's, they're trying all sorts of things. We have, you know, Berman's bill, which is 1078, we've talked about before. That's the bill that, you know, we got proved in Nguyen V. Bonta, and the state kicked out of their ability because they realized how unconstitutional it was and said, okay, so we can't do this 1 in 3. Well, that's 3 in 30.
So, okay. So that was going to be my next question. Is 1127 the only gun control bill that's going to be heard, quote unquote, on Friday?
No, you know, it's 1078, and 1078 says very clearly, we want to limit you because if 1 in 30 is unconstitutional, maybe 3 in 30 isn't. Okay, well, Nguyen V. Bonta, the Ninth Circuit, which I'm going to reiterate is the most liberal court in the nation, said that's a bridge way too far. They issued, it's now law from the Ninth Circuit, that you can't limit the number of firearms.
Right.
So they were told by their own circuit court, can't do this. They don't care.
I mean, that's, you know, on the one hand, it's completely unsurprising that they are, you know, ignoring a court decision that they don't like. Right. I mean, that seems to be the California way, certainly the Gavin Newsom way. But at the same time, I mean, I want people to understand like just how egregious this is. As you say, the Ninth Circuit, I think had a streak of over 50. I know it was over 50 cases where they upheld California gun laws for, you know, whatever specious reason. This was the one where they finally said, hey, on timeout, this goes too far.
Right.
And as you say, you know, the California legislator crafted this bill saying, all right, we'll go from a 1-30 to a 3-30. The bill also said if the courts ever say that 1-30 is OK, we're going to go back to 1-30 just because we can. Right.
Right.
And again, I mean, what's the point here other than the state of California and these California lawmakers saying, well, we want this power. And so it doesn't matter if it's 1-30, 3-30, 5-30. We want to be able to tell you how many guns you get to purchase per month, because that's not a choice that you should be able to make on your own.
Right. It's gun grabbing. And they use, you know, they use these specious arguments all the time in California. Well, your gun rights are like your rights to drive a car. We all know that's absolutely false. There is no truth in that at all. But even when I look at them and go, OK, so let's just say for fun that that was true. You don't do this to people that drive cars. You don't put them through all these things. So that argument holds no weight. That's just something you're throwing out there to try to distract people. What this is about, it's about removing firearms in 1127, a specific company that they don't like. It's about, you know, limiting your ability. This hurts anybody. And I've talked about this. It hurts shooting sports. I mean, if you think about it, Cam, one of the issues you have in most states is that, you know, somebody like yourself or me, we're passionate. We get in there. We work with the kids. But 20, 25 years later, you're not the same person you were 20, 25 years earlier. And so you're like, hey, it's time for somebody else to step up, time to enjoy their kids and going through this process. Well, how do you transfer the firearms that came from the team? And, you know, in California, you can't have an organization. A Boy Scout troop can't own firearms like you could when I was growing up and you were growing up. You know, any of these groups can't do it. Even teams at colleges and universities cannot own it. It's the coaches that the firearms have to be placed in their name.
Oh, so wow.
When you have a coaching change, here's the problem. I mean, like, I can take Fresno State. They have 100 shotguns. Divide up among five coaches. Well, that's 20 guns a coach. It's real simple math here. Well, if you can only transfer one a month or three a month, then you have a coach that's technically still doing work for the university while they're transferring firearms. And here's the point. At any point, that coach can go, no. And because of federal law, those firearms were transferred in that person's name. Therefore, they belong to that person because the university can't own it. So now the program suffers. And we've had that over and over in youth programs where the person wasn't trying to be mean or selfish or just, I'm tired of this. No. Well, now X number of firearms are no longer available to the youth. So now you have to fundraise. You have to find somebody else. This has been an ongoing problem. And it's amazing California is still competitive in those youth shooting sports because of this. But that's by design, not by accident.
This is so crazy. I mean, so what's your advice to California gun owners this week? Is there any point in reaching out to lawmakers?
Yeah, there's a big point. We're trying to continue to push on this. People are mad. People got to stay mad. But it's not just California. And, you know, Cam, I've said this to you before, but if you look at what's going on nationwide, so much of this stuff comes to other states and other states laugh. They mock. I mean, I go places like you do and they're like, oh, there's Rick. He's from California, you know, and I take it. It's fine. But I tell them, I'm like, quit laughing, because, you know, when we got the 11% excise tax, you guys laughed. Then what happened when bears got removed from dog hunting or dogs? I mean, from bear hunting. Said that wrong, but when that came out, that swept the nation. That went everywhere. And so I look at people all the time and say two things. Fight the fight while it's still in California. Help us out here. But secondly, start prepping, because if it gets out of California, it's going to come to your state. And a lot of states do not have the organizational pull that we do in California to fight it. And they get blindsided very quickly.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And we do have, you know, gun rationing laws that are in place in other states. California would be the first in the nation to, ban Glocks. But we know that, you know, Illinois, there's a similar bill pending. New York, I believe, is a similar bill pending. And if California passes this, I mean, you can absolutely expect to see other anti-gun states do the same. And it's important to know, by the way, that as with every gun control bill in California, law enforcement's exempt, right? So the average consumer couldn't buy one, but law enforcement can. I'm curious because would this apply to private sales too? Like if a cop buys a Glock, he can't then sell that Glock off roster. Huh. Oh, interesting how that works.
It's also the point of like, I own a couple of Glocks because it's a great gun. I can't transfer them to my kids, even in my death. They have to be surrendered. So they go nowhere.
Wow. All right. Well, we'll see. We'll see what happens here. I'd like to say I'm cautiously optimistic that neither of these bills are going anywhere. I can't say that, honestly. I mean, I feel like they're going somewhere. They're going to Gavin Newsom's desk. Right. And then we'll see what the supposedly pro-gun governor does with these bills. Somehow I have a feeling, Rick, that the pro-gun Gavin Newsom is going to figure out a way how it's pro-gun to sign these bills into law.
Right. He will. He will say that it's all about common sense gun safety, which is his term for I want to take your guns away from you.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Rick, I don't know how you still have your hair, man, because I would have pulled it out long ago if I was in your job. But I really appreciate everything you're doing on behalf of gun owners, not just in California, but across the nation. Again, folks can help out crpa.org. That's the website for the California Rifle and Pistol Association. And I will be off next week, Rick, but maybe we can have you back on week after next just to give folks an update.
Yeah. And I would like to do, you and I talked offline. We lost a great person in the fight here in California and across the country with the passing of Sam Paredes. And so the fight got tougher in Sacramento because now I've went from one other person full time helping me out in the state to, couple of part-time people for right now. Hopefully one of them are going to step up, but no one's going to be able to fill those shoes.
Yeah. Sam is, he was a legend, in the Second Amendment community, not just in California. And I've known Sam for decades and my heart just broke when you told me the news, a couple of days ago. And so obviously our thoughts and our prayers are with the Paredes family, and with gun owners of California. Irreplaceable is a strong word, but I think that Sam really is one of those irreplaceable activists, right? You can't get back those decades of experience, the institutional knowledge that he had, and honestly, just the vigor and the passion that he brought to this issue. You know, it truly is a huge loss for the Second Amendment community and obviously for his family and friends as well.
Yeah, it sure is.
Well,
thank you.
Absolutely, Rick. And my sympathy, again, I know you guys were close to working together. So my sympathies go out to you, man. I know that you're grieving here, and I'm really sorry that I'm really sorry.
Yeah, he was a brother through and through on every level of that word. So, yeah.
Well, I appreciate you paying tribute to Sam, and maybe we can do that a little bit more in depth the next time we've got you on the program.
Sounds great. Thank you, Cam.
Thank you, Rick.
My thanks to Rick for joining us on the program today. Looking forward to having him back again here before long. Right now, let's turn our attention to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report. We'll start there with a case out of Minnesota. Here's the headline. Harmony man pleads guilty in fatal drunk driving crash. This from the Fillmore County Journal in Minnesota. 51-year-old Brian Wayne Nelson. He's pleaded guilty to vehicular criminal homicide in connection with a crash that left one person dead in rural Fillmore County last summer, the paper reports. The plea entered on Monday, August 18th, before Judge Jeremy Kleinfelter. The incident happened on August 4th, 2024. According to the complaint, deputies with the Fillmore County Sheriff's Office were dispatched to a rural road about 2 miles east of Granger, Minnesota, on a report of an individual who was injured lying in the roadway. When they got there on scene, they found the victim unresponsive, significant trauma to his head and upper body, and he was pronounced dead at the scene. Deputies also quickly identified Nelson as the driver of a Can-Am recreational vehicle that had struck the victim.
Witnesses, including Nelson's wife and sister, were present. Nelson admitted to officers that he had been drinking beer earlier in the evening before getting behind the wheel. He told deputies that he was on his way to a bar in Granger to meet friends when he noticed what he thought was something lying in the road. He explained that he initially thought that he had hit an animal. Drove on to the bar. Nelson told the bartender that he thought he had just run somebody over. And then he returned to the scene with friends and saw the victim's body lying on the ground. Witnesses told deputies that Nelson was, quote, visibly shaken, repeatedly said that he was sorry. Deputies reported that Nelson smelled strongly of alcohol. He agreed to take a preliminary breath test, which measured his blood alcohol concentration at 0.166, which is more than twice the legal limit of 0.08. He admitted that while he first told officers he had consumed three beers, he may have had more but wasn't counting. A search warrant was obtained for a blood sample drawn later that morning, submitted to the Minnesota Bureau of Criminal Apprehension for testing. Nelson originally charged with 7 counts and included 2 counts of criminal vehicular homicide, 2 counts of criminal vehicular operation resulting in great bodily harm, 2 counts of driving while impaired, 1 count of careless driving. Most serious charges carry a maximum penalty of 10 years in prison as well as a $20,000 fine. Some of the other charges include 90 days in jail, up to 5 years in prison. So August 18th, Nelson enters a guilty plea to count 2, criminal vehicular homicide for operating a motor vehicle with an alcohol concentration of 0.08 or more. Again, could have faced up to 10 years in prison and a $20,000 fine. And in fact, he was sentenced to 57 months in prison, which was immediately stayed, which means that he will not have to serve that prison time if he successfully completes probation, a 10-year probationary term. According to the paper, the two sides agreed to leave the exact length of Nelson's initial jail term up to the court. Prosecutors want 334 days. The defense wants 120 days. Any jail time would allow for work release, treatment release, a sentence to service program. He would also be required to serve 3 days in jail every year on the anniversary of the crash during his probationary term. A $6,000 fine or the equivalent of community service work, writing a letter of apology, paying restitution if the court determines that it is appropriate. According to the paper, if the judge declines to grant a departure from the state sentencing guidelines, Nelson can withdraw his guilty plea and proceed to trial. If he imposes fewer than 120 days of jail time, prosecutors can withdraw from the agreement. Court records, according to the paper, show that this is not Nelson's first alcohol-related driving conviction. In 2001, he was convicted of driving while impaired in Fillmore County, sentenced to probation, jail time, and fines. The case also included a conviction for failure to signal, while additional charges for open bottle and exhibition driving were dismissed. The formal sentencing has not taken place yet. I got to say, I just can't approve personally of anybody who kills somebody while under the influence of walking away with what amounts to time served and probation, no matter how long that probation lasts. And again, you know, this individual would have to serve 3 days in jail every year for the next 10 years. So you can, you know, what is that, 30 days? In addition to, you know, whatever time he has spent behind bars or whatever time is ordered to spend in the county jail. That just seems like a slap on the wrist to me for a crime that is punishable by 10 years behind bars. Honestly, I got to say, I think 10 years for driving drunk and killing somebody, I think that's a pretty lenient sentence, honestly. But this is one of those deaths that, again, could have been completely avoided if Nelson hadn't gotten behind the wheel of that RV while he was drunk. And we're not talking, again, about a little drunk, right? Twice the legal limit. That's pretty inebriated. So, you know, he is not a violent criminal. Doesn't have a lengthy criminal history. But the fact that this is not his first alcohol-related conviction, not his first time caught driving drunk, but it is the first time that his drunk driving took a life. Yeah, I'd like to see some prison time, not just, you know, a couple of weekends in the county jail and a letter of apology. That's just me. Your mileage may vary, but yeah, I consider this to be a recidivist report for sure. Now, on to today's Armed Citizen story. We've actually got two for you, because there are going to be some sticklers who say, well, this first one doesn't really count. From Virginia, off-duty trooper shoots and kills man in Virginia Beach home break-in attempt, according to the Virginia State Police. Some folks will say, look, this was an off-duty cop, not a true armed citizen. And it may, honestly, may very well have been connected to this trooper's job. This was 11:45 Sunday morning, which is not typically when break-ins occur. I mean, of course, they can happen at any time, but more common in the dark of night. Preliminary investigation indicates that a 40-year-old man came to the front door of the agent's home and attempted to break in. Again, also kind of unusual for a broad daylight break-in on a weekend, too, by the way, right? Wasn't skulking around the house, wasn't jimmying open a patio door. Broad daylight, Sunday morning, tries to break in the front door of the home. The agent confronted him, shot the man, who later succumbed to his injuries at a hospital. The off-duty agent also suffered moderate injuries, was taken in for medical treatment. Don't have, again, a lot of information. Police haven't said if the man knew the agent, what the man's motive might have been. They also have not released his identity. But this is a clear-cut case of self-defense. Now, if you prefer your armed citizen stories to be true civilians, not just off-duty law enforcement, well, we've got one of those for you as well. This from a Georgia alleged attempted robber shot during online sale meetup in Dunwoody. Also happened over the weekend. Also happened, it sounds like, broad daylight, 3:30 Saturday afternoon at an apartment complex in Dunwoody, Georgia. The armed citizen in this case was trying to sell something he had listed online. Interested parties show up. Apparently, one of the interested parties pulls a gun. Shots fired in both directions. Thankfully, the intended victim was not hurt, but one of his attackers was. He was arrested when officers arrived on the scene. The second individual apparently fled the area. Police still looking for him. And again, according to law enforcement, nobody else was injured. You know, this is obviously not the first time that we have heard of something like this, including an armed citizen aspect to these stories, but it is not particularly uncommon. You post something on Facebook Marketplace, you post it on Craigslist, you know, the buyer shows up, and in some cases, it's actually the seller that's the armed robber, right? They're waiting for the buyer to show up because the buyer's going to have cash, and then they get robbed. So one easy way to reduce the threat of this happening, it doesn't eliminate it entirely because we've actually had a couple of stories where robberies have taken place in police department parking lots. But, you know, say, listen, if we're going to meet, let's meet at the police department. And admittedly, it might be a pain in the rear end if you're selling a couch or something big that you've got to move and then they've got to pick up and move. But considering the alternative, the potential loss of life if you are the victim of a robbery, I'd say that that inconvenience is small compared to the potential harm that could be done there. So I would advise, if you're doing something, making an online transaction like that, if you're not going to meet in a police station parking lot, at least meet in a well-lit area. But again, broad daylight, apartment complex, right? Should be people around. You'd think that would be a safe location, but nope, not when you've got somebody with criminal intent there. Finally today, our good deed of the day. In the right place, at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing. A off-duty firefighter in Kentucky who was able to save the life of a man at a restaurant. As it turns out, this off-duty firefighter wasn't eating at the restaurant. He just had walked in to pick up some carryout. Rick Lauterbach was there eating dinner with his wife. They were celebrating her birthday. Piece of food gets stuck in his throat. Lauterbach said, I realized what was going on. I looked around, and there was only one guy in there that was going to be able to help me. That guy, a gentleman named Robert Sawyer Jr., who told WDRB in Louisville that Lauterbach stood up and said, I saw him wheezing, and I looked at him, and he couldn't breathe. So I just stood up with the urgency and got behind him, and I saw him nod his head like, yeah, I want your help. That's when he jumped into action, performed the Heimlich maneuver. Lauterbach said, you know, it's great to have people out there that know what to do, when to do it. And they not only know what to do, but they do it. And he said, that was beautiful and glorious. Lauterbach is a pastor in Taylorsville, Kentucky, said he does not believe in accidents. He said that Sawyer had walked in to get carry out at that exact time for a reason. He said if someone hadn't been there that could have done it, the outcome could have been entirely different. He said, so I count that as providence and grace and mercy. Sawyer, a firefighter in Jeffersontown, Kentucky. And he said, you know, you say you're off, but when you're a fireman in certain situations, you're not ever really off duty. He said, afterward, on my ride home, I was kind of like, wow, I kind of just saved someone's life. Not kind of. Absolutely saved somebody's life. The two men have connected since that incident. Lauterbach says, you know, turned into something great. I made a friend out of someone who's half my age, I'm guessing. Sawyer said, you know, we might reach out, get lunch one day, get dinner, meet families. I'm not sure if lunch or dinner might be the best thing, but, you know, in the right place at the right time, we're able to do the right thing for a stranger in need and maybe the start of a beautiful friendship as a result. Robert Sawyer, there in the Louisville, Kentucky area, we thank you, sir, for your very, very good deed. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms, Cam & Company. I want to thank you, as always, for being a part of the program. Coming up on tomorrow's show, we're going to be talking with John Comerford, NRA ILA's executive director. We have a lot of stuff to talk about, including a new lawsuit filed in federal court in Massachusetts and some more victories, legal victories for the NRA as well. So be sure to tune in for that again tomorrow on Bearing Arms, Cam & Company. Until then, I'd say check out BearingArms.com throughout the rest of the day, keeping up to date on all of the latest Second Amendment news and information that you need to know about. And if you like what you see, I'd encourage you to become a VIP, VIP Gold, or VIP Platinum member. Just use the promo code FIGHT, and you can get 60% off your membership when you sign up at BearingArms.com/subscribe. Thanks again for being a part of the program today. Looking forward to seeing you back here again tomorrow. Until then, be well, be safe, and be free.